Yes, wow. I just want to take you in for a minute. I want to say thanks, first of all, to everybody who did everything while I was gone. You know, I was supposed to be back here with you on November the 20th and found out I had COVID the day before I flew back from the UK. And so I'm going to let you in on the secret. That day, the video that you saw of me was recorded on Saturday. So I didn't get to hear your responses to the talk and to me that day because I was at home asleep. And but I want to thank our tech team and Leah and our musicians for just holding everything together so beautifully. And a special thanks when I got a rebound case of COVID. Finn, man, thank you. You know what I actually did was I sent Finn a text on Friday and just said, dude, can you switch with me? And then I erased the text, but not before you saw it. I erased the text because I thought, no, he's got a family, he's doing the Christmas party that I'm not going to be able to go to. And I thought, no, I am not going to put that on him. We'll work it out. And man, you stepped up, and I can't thank you enough. To be able to see you do what you're doing is, boy, what a gift. So today, it's just the simple topic of love. And I thought, how am I gonna condense this down to a few minutes? Because it's such a huge, huge topic. And so I took my cues from the Daily Word, and I'm gonna talk to you a little bit about love in action, talk to you about what love is and what it's teaching us to be. You know, I've been doing a lot of reflecting lately, which is good when you're on a sabbatical to reflect. And I'm looking at the difference in generations, looking at the way life is different now than it was 10 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago. And I realized that my children, for example, have not grown up in a world without an abundance of information. And so, you know, when I was growing up, when I was their age, you got the information from watching the news or reading the newspaper. And there were whole facets of life I never knew about until I was much, much older than they are in their lives, about the world and everything in it. And so we have a much greater opportunity to decide how we're going to practice love because there's a lot for us to see. Most of the time, it's more than we want to see, you know? We get to see more of the beauty of the world, more of the beauty of human beings, but we also get to see where we operate at a much lower vibrational level than 540 hertz. Is that right? 540? Yes.
540 is gratitude.
Okay.
528 is love.
528 is love, sorry. I'll work on my hertz homework. Yeah, that's right. Oh, man, I wish I'd said that. So if we're going to love more, we have to work on our hurts. Okay, I'm done. That's all I need. That's all I need to do for today. That was great. Thank you, Judy. So we get challenged to love more, don't we? And one of the things that love does in us, first of all, it's not a feeling. It's more than that. You know, a feeling of love depends on a whole lot of stuff. It has a lot of conditions around it. It has to do with, you know, whether or not we got a good night's sleep the night before, you know? So love is not just a feeling, although a feeling is the byproduct of loving, of being love. And so it's a choice, it's a challenge, it's really hard work, And it calls us to engage with life in a higher way than we might have thought we wanted to. You understand? If any of you have had a loved one who unexpectedly had a downturn in their health and needed your care, like needed your care, love takes you in a direction you're not expecting to go. It plunges deeper. It carves us out. It creates a greater receptacle in us to receive that which already is. So love also encourages us to get over ourselves. And I mean that in every way that I can think of. To get over our judgment, to get over our feeling that we don't deserve love and we can't give love, our unhealthy ways of loving, our codependent ways of loving. It helps us get over ourselves so that we have a place beyond our addictions to be able to feel life with all of its polarities, right? I told my mom this week, I said, you know, I know, I've been around the spiritual journey a little while. I know that we're required to pivot as life changes. We're required to step up. We're required, and I'm so tired of doing that. You know, the last 3 years, oh my gosh. You know, I'm tired of it. Not going to stop doing it, but I think it's good to acknowledge that, wow, I kind of don't want to be that resilient, thanks, you know? And yet, it seems to me that our world is going faster and faster and faster, and there are challenges that are honing us more sharply than they maybe have before ever in our lives. And so we're either going to step up to that or we're going to check out. We're going to check out by leaving the planet, or we're going to check out by staying here and trying to pull the blankets over our heads. You get to do that, by the way. You do get to pull your blanket over your head for about that long. Then you got to get up and get going. And if you're having trouble doing that, there are plenty of people that will help pull you out of wherever you are. I shared this in my Thursday midday reflections. When I found out that I was, that I had COVID again, and dang, I was doing so good. You know, almost 3 years without getting it, and we fell like little soldiers on vacation. Ain't that the way? And not sure where we got it. David got it first, we think, maybe on the airplane. Not sure. And then, you know, just right on schedule, Alex and I were positive. So, I was talking with, my therapist, and she did a healing meditation with me on Tuesday, and I want to share this with you. She is so good. She's very intuitive. She works with all different modalities, and she did a healing meditation using color with me the other day. Now, if this is not something you're familiar with, it's not too woo-woo. Well, it's kind of woo-woo. But it's also effective if you're open to it. Anyway, she used a color that I don't think I've ever used in meditation before, and I didn't like it. I felt my body resisting it. And later on, she said, yeah, that was probably the virus. And I thought, this is the way it works. I would not have thought of using that color, of using that meditation, but I asked for what I needed. And this meditation, I felt my body just going, nope, we don't like this color and we're not dealing with this meditation. And then the higher part of me said, oh yeah, we are. So just open up a little space there for the light to get in. And you know, I felt kind of weird. I took a little short nap later on. I woke up and 2 days later, I'm negative. So, you know, there's two things there healing is. healing is, and ask for what you need, and be open to receiving. That right there is an act of love for yourself, but it's also an act of love that you're allowing your healing partners to have with you. That's why our chaplains and our prayer team are so effective here. Because not only do we have a need to be prayed with and for, a need to open ourselves up to the love that's coming our way, because that's what prayer is. It's love at a high vibration. But we're also allowing those who are called to serve to perform their act of love. You see, it's not just a one-way street. If you ever find yourself saying, oh, I don't want to bother them, it's not that big a deal. Because how many of you have ever done that? Oh, gosh, yeah, only two people. Only two people in this whole room have ever done that. So let me just ask you to dig down a little bit deeper. How many of you ever said, I don't want to bother anybody with my needs? Durr. And what we're doing is depriving someone else of the opportunity to serve. Yeah, how about that? We need to do it. So I'm going to come to the Christmas story for just a moment. One day this week, in Father Richard Rohr's meditation, he talks about, through the author Debbie Thomas, holy bewilderment. And this has to do with the part of the story where Mary is approached by the angel. Now, again, I always say this during the entire Christmas season. The story of Christmas, from soup to nuts, is about the different characters and who they are in us. The Christmas story is archetypal. You don't have to believe the facts. You don't. If you say, I don't think that happened, that's perfectly fine. But what it does do is it reaches down into something really deep in us, doesn't it? There's something about that story. There's something about the idea that which is greater than us cares about us enough to put some characters into a story that touches us, that speaks to us throughout centuries, millennia. So we look at the story of Mary and we look at ourselves. And I always love this part of the Christmas story, because when the angel comes, the scripture says, but Mary was much perplexed. You think? You think she was? She's never been with a man, from what we understand in the story. She's pure and untouched, right? And so you're going to have a baby. So, Mary, according to the scripture, gives us a good example of not freaking out. Because she says, do you remember what the words are? How can this be? That's what I always say when something surprises me. How can this be? She says, how can this be? And the angel says, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We're going to tell Joseph. So he's going to get it straight from the source. And this is going to be fine. You'll see. And I'm sure as she grew, this is not what she was thinking. But Mary is an example to us of faith and saying, okay, I'm going to go along for this ride. Let's see where it takes us. Well, it took her on the back of a donkey when she was about to deliver to Jerusalem. Let's just say that Mary in this story symbolizes for us the inconvenience of life sometimes. And inconvenience is an understatement. Because all of you ladies out there who've carried children, you know that right as close to delivery, being on a donkey is not ideal transportation. So she's just deciding to embrace this shocking reality, right? And so this author says, what an interesting shock reality has been. Who knew that my life with God would actually be one long goodbye? That to know God is to unknow God. To shed my neat conceptions of the divine like so many old snake skins and emerge into the world bare, vulnerable, and new again and again. I'm laying the groundwork for love here. So this is what Mary has to do in the aftermath of Gabriel coming to her. She has to consent to evolve, to wonder, to stretch. She has to learn that faith and doubt are not opposites. That beyond all the easy platitudes and pieties of religion, we serve a God who dwells in mystery. If we agree to embark on a journey with this God, we will face periods of bewilderment. But this frightens us, so we compartmentalize our spiritual lives, trying to hold our relationship with God at a sanitized remove from our actual circumstances. We don't realize that such efforts leave us with a faith that's rigid, inflexible, and stale. Now, I'm sure that doesn't apply to any of you, but I bet you know people that are there. Just saying. The poet Christopher Wyman writes, life is not an error, even when it is. That is to say, whatever faith you emerge with at the end of your life is going to be not simply affected by that life, but intimately dependent upon it. For faith in God is, in the deepest sense, faith in life, which means that even the staunchest life of faith is a life of great change. It follows that if you believe at 50 what you believed at 15, then you have not lived. Amen. Or you've denied the reality of your life. So I would just ask you that if your inherited beliefs have collided with the messy circumstances of your lives, that you go from a two-dimensional faith to one that is vibrant and textured. You know, one of the practices that I'm seeing out in the world right now is celebrating Krampus. Do you know Krampus? Krampus, as we would say in Texas. Krampus. Was that me?
Krampus.
What did I do?
Krampus coming.
Okay, it was Krampus. So Krampus is a tradition from Northern Europe, Germany, Austria. They think it came from the Northern tribes of the Norse. And so Krampus is pretty scary looking. And Krampus is the one who accompanies Santa Claus or St. Nicholas. And they go from house to house in the tradition. Santa Claus giving gifts to the good children and Krampus doing the opposite. And so this is a big tradition that's starting to come into the United States as well. And they think that maybe it's becoming so popular as a reaction against the commercialism of Christmas. So Krampus, if you haven't seen him, in the old tradition, these characters dress up in long, furry outfits, and they have horns, and they have scary faces, and they carry whips or reeds to punish the bad children. See, this is a fun story in church, isn't it? And one of the reasons I'm talking about that today is one of my ventures out to see if I could, how my stamina was doing was my kids and I, my sons and I, went to the haunted house area that does Halloween. They do Krampus. It was so fun because Krampus, I have pictures. Krampus is scary looking, but it's an opportunity to laugh at that which scares us. It's an opportunity to have the laughter and the lightheartedness of this dichotomy, this paradoxical scenario, It makes us larger. Because are we not living in a world in which we have to look at that which is unpleasant? We have to look at the ways in which we punish ourselves and bring those things into reconciliation. You know, for a long time, the affirmative nature of unity seemed to disregard reality a little bit. It was an important part of our evolution to be able to affirm the goodness of God. But like all pendulums that swing, it went kind of way over here to la, 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 everything's positive, cancel, cancel the bad stuff. Because that was part of the shift in our thinking. And now it's coming back to, we live here in the world. We've got our feet right here on the ground. And we're also spiritual beings. We are also in constant contact with God as much as we're possibly able to. And even when we're not in contact, Spirit is. And the anchor for that is love. The anchor for that is the challenge of loving in a world that would give us evidence that it is not loving. This is a time, beloved, this season, at this season, right now, this is the time for us to see how we're going to stretch the love muscle, if you will, our love capacity. How are we going to stretch it? Where are we not loving? And believe me, beloved, if you ask that question, you're going to find out. You're going to find out all the places that you are not loving, where you're not demonstrating love. So there's the caveat. Don't do it unless you're ready to see and to know. You won't be sorry. Do you know, I found a little thing. I'm not even going to go into it. I'll talk to you some other time about the difference between ignorance or stupidity and anti-intellectualism. They're two different things. But I needed that differentiation so that I can love groups of people with whom I disagree or who disagree with me. So again, rising to the challenge of easy to love your brother, love your enemy. And the enemy is a construct that we make ourselves. You know, there is nothing in the creation of the world and humanity that says, okay, the bad people over here, the good people over here, which camp are you in? No, we're all just people. And our loving is the strength that binds us, that lifts us all up, all of us. So love that difficult person. Love that person who's not in your camp. My friends, we've been gathering ourselves in groups as human beings since the time we were around fires, hunting for our food. We've needed the stories, like Christmas, to help us understand, to tap into the parts of us that are eternal and permanent. We need the stories. We need the things that scare us so we can see where our fears are so that we can give them up. We need the reflections of beauty so that we know what we want to embrace and magnify. That's what this season's about. Next week, we're going to talk about, what are we talking about next week? Joy. No problem. Because we're going to be wearing our ugly Christmas sweaters. So there's that. So the last thing I'll leave you with today is that I get every day a meditation from Hazelden Betty Ford. And I love the meditation that came yesterday. Happiness cannot be sought directly. It's a byproduct of love and service. Service is a law of our being. with love in your heart, there is always some service to other people. A life of power and joy and satisfaction is built on love and service. People who hate or are selfish are going against the law of their own being. They are cutting themselves off from God and other people. Little acts of love and encouragement, of service and help, ease the rough places of life and help to make the path smooth. If we do these things, we cannot help having our share of happiness. That's what loving is, my friends. It's being and serving. It is having and doing. I want to share with you today that just last night, this will add to your happiness for sure. Just last night, about 11:30, our friend Avi Giovaccini delivered Baby and So. And Avi and Nick have become an important part of our community. Nick's one of our chaplains. And this is a long-awaited baby. And look at that beautiful little face, would you? We're so happy for them. And so happy that as Avi went into labor last night, Nick reached out to our chaplains, allowing service. And it is the acts of service that you have been doing, that this community has grown into. Oh, my goodness. The way that you give of yourselves to each other in the visible and invisible ways. Those things make it comfortable for me to tell you that when my contract is up at the end of March, I am retiring. And it's a decision that I needed some clarity and some quiet in order to make certain. And I've had the opportunity, thanks to you, and thanks to our board who allowed me some sabbatical time that was much needed, that I became clear with my decision. It is a blessing greater than you can imagine that I can step away from you knowing that you hold each other in the best of hands. Oh my goodness. If there is anything a minister ever wants, it's to become irrelevant because they've done their job. Because we have entered into an agreement, a partnership, a cocoon of loving service to each other. That I can know that Unity of Wimberley is alive and well and maybe better than ever before and will continue to be so and do so long after I'm gone. So I'm making this announcement today because it will be our last Christmas season together in this way. And I think we owe that transparency to each other. And I also wanted you to know that I informed the board of my decision quite a few weeks ago so that they could start arranging themselves mentally, spiritually, physically to take on the next challenge. And they are already in the works of putting together the minister search team like we did 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, when the last minister left, to be able to find good candidates to present to you for your next spiritual leader. I've also announced my retirement to the Unity Worldwide Ministries and they are on board to support this church in every way that they can with all the resources that are available. And it was also very important to me to be able to walk with you through this transition, to be able to process with you whatever you need to process, for us to be able to honor and acknowledge the grief that coming apart brings us. That is also my role here. But not just my role, it's me and you, my friends. It's me and you. And so we'll walk through this together. And we'll be okay. We'll be okay. You all know some of the challenges that I've had in my life the last few years, and they don't seem to be letting up too much. And so I don't want to divide my attention any more than I have to. And I want to thank all of you today, and this is not the last of thank yous and not the last of goodbyes for certain. I want to thank you all for today for making my time at Unity of Wimberley the most rewarding that I've had in over 30 years of ministry. So, so rich, so blessed, so fulfilling. You are extraordinary. You teach me every day what love is. And so, take a deep breath, because now we're going to pray ourselves into the next part of our lives. Listen to your heart right now. And do not turn away from whatever it is feeling, telling you. Let yourself go into that, because it's only when we dwell in our hearts that we are able to live our fullest, richest lives. We are so much stronger and more precious than we give ourselves credit for. And it seems that our lives are a long, long lesson in understanding how precious we are. So that flame that lives in your heart all the time, that little pilot light, really does burn all the time. All the time. It burns away the unnecessary. It illuminates our next steps. It cradles us. It acknowledges our tears. And it gives strength and purpose to our feet, to our hands, to our voices, to our minds. So if you find yourself so in the clouds that you can't get things done, or so bound to the earth that you've lost your inspiration, turn to the light of love right now that brings everything into balance. Keep breathing, beloved. And now draw strength and companionship for all the people in this room. Draw strength and companionship with the unseen faces and presence that are out there in our online viewing. And as you draw that strength, know that you are also putting it back out into the world. That you are a beacon, that you are a light that shines brightly, that you are teachable and tender and strong, and yes, you are resilient, and you are brave. And we give thanks today for the spirit that binds all of us. We give thanks for love. And so it is. Amen.